Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, it's another episode of Earth Station One, and yes, we are starting a new program here this week on ESO, and we are introducing the ESO Book Club. That's right, folks, we're adding culture to the podcast. Can you believe it? And we are going to talk all about one of my favorite trades that has come out over probably the last 20 years. And it is the first Sandman book by Neil Gaiman. And it is, to some people, it's just a pure classic. And, you know, it is called Preludes and Nocturnes. And it is just amazing. I remember when they came out in individual issues and being blown away by it. And now that, you know, they're in separate trades, but I know they also have the omnibuses. Because I think, Mike, you've read the omnibuses?
I have the Absolutes.
The Absolutes. Okay. So it's
pretty... They also have an omnibus. They have an annotated version. I mean, they've got all sorts. I mean, any way you want to read Sandman, it's available.
Oh, yeah. And it is what got me hooked on Neil Gaiman. So it's going to be a blast to talk all about. And you've heard this man already on the show. So back from the New England area, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, bud?
I'm just fine there.
Fine there. Oh, you already got your accent back. Awesome.
Yeah. Sorry. It takes a little while to wear off.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, I'm almost expecting you to start talking about Petridge Farms or something like that.
Petridge Farms remembers.
Exactly. See? But yeah, how was the trip, or do you want to just save that for the con report?
Well, it was very good. I mean, it was good to go up north. It's always good. It's a homecoming for me, and it's a great time to go up there because it's kind of half fall, like almost starting the winter. So we got to see a little bit of snow. That's always nice, but it wasn't too snowy. So it wasn't, you know, nothing was like schools weren't closed and all that nonsense. And, but trees were, you know, definitely all different colors, and just there's something about being in New England around this time of year that just is really cool. So, and that's probably because I'm from there, but, you know, the change of seasons and everything really means a lot to me, and family, friends means a lot to me too. So, and there was, it was a good time.
That's awesome. You know, doing the show, but not as much fun if you weren't here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, when I first read Sandman, I was still in college. So I was up there for that. So, yeah, that this is bringing back memories of being up there as well. But and, you know, the book club is a great idea, you know, because we've done other things kind of like this, but not really like reviewing an actual book. Now, that granted, this is not like a novel, so we're not going full book club on you. But this is deep stuff. I mean, it's not like we're just, you know, starting with something, you know, lowbrow.
Us lowbrow? Never.
No, this is some pretty deep stuff. So it should be really good and interesting conversation. I know we've got some great guests to talk about it. So I look forward to it. Between this and the next week talking about Westworld, yeah, we're going to be talking about things that are way, 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 way over our heads, Mike.
Oh, shocker there.
It's just, yeah, we're just swimming with sharks.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And this is going to become a regular segment actually on the show. So we'll probably be doing it once a quarter. So if you have suggestions of things you want us to read and review up on the podcast, please feel free to write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. You know, if you find what you tell us interesting enough, we definitely will get right into it. So with that being said, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we talk about what's on our minds. We actually haven't talked a lot about what's been going on in the comic industry lately. What are you reading right now, Mike?
Well, it's a great time to do so. I mean, we're talking about Sandman, which is a pretty amazing comic and got a lot of people interested in comic. Really, it was a game changer in terms of the industry. And it's, you know, I think we could use a game changer now because things are, there's a lot of really good stuff out there. There's a lot of great stuff out there. But there's, it seems like there's a, like there's a lack of enthusiasm and energy like we had 20 years ago when Sandman came out. Was it 20 years? 30. 20 or 30, right? 25, something like that?
I think it's 25 years ago because it was, it has, well, actually, it was right about early 90s. So,
did you think about it? Yeah. It was so revolutionary. But now, if it came out today, it would still kind of be revolutionary. There's a lot of stuff that's like, you know, I think, you know, we've talked about Brian K. Vaughan and what he's doing with Saga, you know. And that's still amazing. And I think that's comparable. Although it's not as deep, not that it's not good, but I mean, Sandman's really weighty. I mean, when you read it, I mean, granted I'm reading The Absolute, so that does weigh a ton, but I mean, you really feel it on every panel, on every page that this is literature. It's smooth. It goes down smooth, but it's heavy. And I don't know that we really have a lot of that right now, but we have a lot of really good, interesting stuff. Because, you know, even though I am reading still the Rebirth stuff from DC, and I've got a few titles from Marvel even, really the stuff that Image is doing and some of the other like Aftershock comics, I love what is going on in independent comics right now.
Oh, yeah. Truthfully, I have not been reading a ton of the DC stuff. It's just, it's getting old. The one DC title that I'm sticking with, though, is the actual Superman title.
Oh, wow.
Which I've been loving since they brought back. Basically, it's supposed to be the pre-Flashpoint Superman. And he's married to Lois, and they have a son. And it's just great. And what they're doing with the comic, it's just been a ton of fun. And for DC, I think that's awesome. I gave up reading Justice League. Still carrying on with Titans, which is, you know, basically it's the new Teen Titans from the 1980s.
It's that kind of that Wolfman Perez run that we talked about a few episodes ago,
right?
That they did. It feels close to that. It's pretty good. It's as close to that as we've gotten in a long time from a Titans. So
exactly.
So it's good to have that dynamic back. And I'm reading that as well. You're right. I'm not reading Justice League, which is a shame because I love that team, but I just can't get into those books.
No, not at all.
I still read the Batman stuff. Some of the other, I've really switched to trades more, but like you said, I'm going towards more sort of independent stuff. Speaking of Brian K. Vaughan, I just finished the second volume of Paper Girls, which is outstanding as well. If people aren't reading Paper Girls, if anybody out there likes Stranger Things, and who doesn't like Stranger Things, they should pick up Paper Girls, Volume 1 and 2, because it's about four girls that, guess what they do? They deliver papers. They're paper girls. And it takes place in the 80s.
No way.
And some stuff goes down. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's crazy the stuff that goes on, and it's, the art is beautiful, and you know, it's Brian K. Vaughan, so you can trust what he's writing. As far as, you know, the characters, the girls feel like girls; they don't just feel like guys speaking in girls, you know, bodies. It's really, really a good read. Volume 1 and 2, and I can't wait till volume. It's one of those ones that I wish I could switch to getting monthly, but really the trade is always really awesome and special when it comes out.
Oh, that's awesome, sir.
So I definitely recommend that.
Okay, what else?
Our friends Joe Pruitt at Aftershock and is doing some great stuff. I have read the trade for American Monster, written by Brian Azzarello with art by John Doe. That's really haunting and crime noirish and just very, very good. It's just like, it just feels dirty when you read it. It's really cool. Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor write a book for them called Super Zero, which is, you know, if anybody's out there that likes their work on Harley Quinn that they're doing right now, I definitely recommend picking up Super Zero. And they just came out with a trade, I think, for the trade of Mark Waid. It has a book through them. It's more superhero-ish. And I think Wilfredo Torres, who we've had on the show before, does the art for that. And I'm looking forward to picking up that trade. Oh, and Joe Pruitt himself writes a book called Black Eye Kids, which is horror, horror, horror. And creepy, creepy, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, dark, dark, dark horror. So I would definitely recommend that one for people who are into, dare I say it again, horror.
What was that? What kind of stuff? Horror?
It's horror.
It's horror.
But I give a lot of credit. I mean, Aftershock came out of nowhere, but they've got a lot of great talents, and they're putting together some really good books. There's a couple of other ones that I'm very eager to try out as well. They're doing different things, but they look good. They've got great talent behind them.
That is awesome. Cool. So it's awesome to hear that there's some good stuff out there with that. I'm reading a lot of the Doctor Who books still.
Okay. Now, are you getting those quote unquote the floppies? Are you getting them?
Yeah, I'm buying monthly. Buying monthly still.
Okay, gotcha. So yeah, I'm trying to get those from the trade. So yeah,
I'm still loving the 11th Doctor stories and the 12th Doctor stories. Not so much the 10th Doctor story. I have adored what they have done with the 3rd Doctor.
So that's really good.
Oh, I can't rave enough what they've done with that.
That's awesome.
And you know, it's just, it feels like you're watching something right out of the TV show. And so it's great. And probably not an era of Doctor Who that a certain co-host of ours would like because of who the companion is.
Oh no. Big ball of hair.
Exactly. So, but it's great to be able to have the Doctor stuff going. And I'm really enjoying that part, but I'm also liking just the characterizations in there. And they did just finished a crossover with the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctor with a Cyberman story. So
now,
it was actually pretty cool.
You know, I know that there was some, concerns when IDW lost the license, because IDW was doing a pretty good job with Doctor Who, but then it went to Titan and a lot of people were concerned about the quality and everything. How do you feel about that? Do you think it's better, worse, the same?
I think that the quality's actually picked up since Titan.
They're doing a lot more.
Yes. I'm actually afraid that they're going to flood the market, because I know they're also putting out a Torchwood. Yeah. And there's a 4th Doctor story that just finished, actually.
Gotcha.
But I've heard rumor that they might be bringing him back for an ongoing series, because the Ninth Doctor is doing an ongoing now also.
Gotcha.
So I just,
how there's much a lot is, of Doctor Who books. That's one of the reasons why I'm getting them by trade and I'm way behind on them, because there's so much.
Right. But you also have, it's kind of interesting that you have all that Doctor Who out there. But, you know, I'm also reading Walking Dead still.
Which is, I'm doing that by trade, so I'm behind where you are. But it's still really good as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it's amazing where they are, because the war's going on right now. Negan has kind of taken over the Whispers. But I'm not going to tell you anything else about that.
Yeah, that in and of itself is a big spoiler, jerk.
Uh-huh.
But yes, I think people should know if they're not reading the book, or, you know, that Negan is definitely a force to be reckoned with in the book. And And yeah, it's he's still there.
Mm-hmm. He's still around. And
so the show is not terribly far behind where the book is.
No, they're catching up. And I know this TV show is going to be doing this Sunday is the half season finale. So they'll be taking their break till February or March. And, you know, so they'll have something, but they haven't even gotten close to, you know, they haven't joined all the different camps together yet, even on the TV show. People are complaining that it's actually gotten too spread out as it is. So we'll have to see what they people, you know, happens. But, you know, there's a lot of things coming from if they're going somewhat by the comic about to happen on the show. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Also reading Astro City still, which has been quality all the way through.
I don't know why. I think there was that period of time where it was kind of like dropped for a little bit. So that it like was not in print for a while. And correct. I think since it came back, I've just never picked it back up. And it wasn't because I didn't like it, because I really loved it. I just hadn't like just really just got it back into it yet. So I think it was one of those things where I'm like, oh, I'll collect those by trade. And I just haven't gone back and actually got the trades yet. But that's a really, really compelling like universe.
Yeah, it's a great universe because it's so familiar, because it's a great hybrid between the DC and Marvel universe.
Right.
And they take it quite well all the way through. And I enjoyed seeing that. And, you know, it's definitely worth reading, and the stories are all original. They're not like trying to rehash stuff from DC and Marvel. It's just like a real world where superheroes are everyday things. And these are everyday people type thing.
So, and is it still, who's the artist on that? It's still, cause it's Kurt Busiek, right?
Yes.
And the artist was Anderson. Is that right?
Yeah, it still is.
Okay. And Alex Ross covers?
Yo, yeah.
What a, you know, for that combination, you should just keep just doing what you just keep doing it until, you know, it runs out.
Oh, I know. And there's, you know, things I pick up, just hate to say it, you know, for bathroom reading, you know, at the 50 cent bins, usually at comic shops or at, you know, or at a convention, you know, just to like, you know, if I don't want to collect it or anything, I'll wait for a comic to be 50 cents and I'll pick it up. And if it had my curiosity going, like I just picked up the first trade of Nova when they brought the character back, and
right.
It's a fun, easy read. You know, it's not like I'm going to start collecting it, but it was fun to read and I paid $2 for the trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, stuff like that is always good. Cause you know, there's some days when you're watching TV or if you're editing a podcast and you need something to read while you're editing, you know, it's perfect.
I see.
But speaking of reading, we actually have the Geek Seat coming up in a sec, and we have a brand new up and coming writer author on the show.
Right. Speaking of comics that everybody must have.
Exactly. So we'll get back to that in a few.
There's a fair chance you don't like the news, and I get that. I'm Buzz Burbank, and I do a different kind of newscast I think you will like. I tell stories, true stories, because when you view it the right way, there's nothing more amazing than real life. I cover most of the stuff the big media outlets cover, but often with a different approach, richer in detail, and with a perspective that ties it all together so we have some idea of what it all means. I deliver stories that'll make you laugh, make you cry, and make you angry, because that is the nature of life, and because you cannot be a better citizen unless you understand and feel the news. I also don't cover some of the useless stories you'll find elsewhere, and do cover real stories the rest of the media somehow managed to avoid. With my nearly 40 years' experience in broadcast journalism and a love of writing, this is a news program that's custom-made for you. Buzz Burbank News and Comment is now a weekly show, new each Thursday, and available free on iTunes, SoundCloud, and several other platforms, and at buzzburbank.com. In addition to the other shows you enjoy here on the ESO Broadcast Network, thank you for adding me to your playlist as well.
Share my dreams.
Welcome back, everyone. We are now having an interview with a new up-and-coming comic book artist and writer. Mike, you want to do the introductions?
Absolutely. He is fresh off his selling out of his book at his first convention. The book is called Super Cheese, 4-in-1. It's the first issue, and I am pleased to welcome aboard the station Aaron Barabee. Welcome,
Hi.
Aaron. Howdy. How are you,
Hi.
Sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. Welcome to the station. Tell us a little bit about your comic.
Well, it's when there's this guy named Super Cheese. He's made of cheese in the cheese world. And he goes around saving the people of Cheese City and the cheese world from cheese bad guys. You notice I say cheese a lot.
Yes. Do you must like cheese a lot.
Yes. But also chocolate.
I know one of his bad guys is Mozzarella Man.
And I am thinking of other ones like Pepper Jack Jack and Provolone Hound. Because Pepper Jack Jack is when he throws hot peppers and they explode. Kind of like bombs.
Right. That's pretty cool. How long did it take you to make your comic?
Around 5 to 6 months. I kind of like, you know, it's just, well, I kind of stopped working for around 1 month because I kind of forgot. But then Mom reminded me, and then I'm like, oh, shoot, I got to, like, work on it.
Yeah, because you had to finish it in time for the convention.
Right. But that was, like, 3 months ago.
Right. But you wrote it and you drew it all yourself, correct?
Yes, correct.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. And now, have you drawn any other comics as well?
Well, there's this one comic I made when I was in third grade named Jack Attack and the AJL.
What does AJL stand for?
Awesome Justice League.
Awesome Justice League.
And so he's also a superhero, and he has basically telekinesis and kind of like Green Lantern's powers, basically. And gotcha. Then there's other people like Laserhead, which he is on crutches, but he folds his legs into this suit, and then he flies around instead of walking on crutches.
Gotcha. That sounds pretty awesome. And are you going to continue with that one as well?
Yes.
Oh, cool. So you've got other comics in mind for the future?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, I was there, of course, when Super Cheese made its debut. We are proud to publish it here at New Legends, so I was happy to do that. And you sold out of your book at the convention. That was pretty amazing.
Well, how I pulled that off is I went to other tables and I was asking, like, hi, do you want a Super Cheese comic, or are you interested in a Super Cheese comic? Stuff like that. And I think, in my opinion, they're like, some people were like, well, I can't say no to a kid, it would be rude, so maybe. But some people, from the cover, thought that, oh my gosh, that's really cool, I want to read more. Because that gets the reader hooked.
Yes.
The cover.
Yes. Yep. The cover is very important. And there was a lot of people who read the book and then told you the next day that they really liked it.
Yes.
So did you had a good time at the convention? Did you do anything else fun besides sell your comic?
Well, I did go to Subway and made my favorite sandwich.
let me guess. It had cheese on it.
Melted shredded cheese.
Yes, very good. Very good. Well, very cool. Well, we are going to now have a junior edition of the Geek Seat questions that Mike is going to ask you. And you are ready for those?
Maybe yes.
Well, that's good, because nobody's ever really sure that they're really ready for
the maybe questions. Yes.
This is a smaller version of the chair, so it'll be a bit maybe tight.
I know. I'm just shaking right now. I don't know why, but it's just sometimes it's when I do something important. Like I did the announcements at school, I kind of stammered. But still, I could like put it into like I meant to do that.
Yes. A lot of people get nervous sitting in the chair before the questions, so that's okay. You're in good company.
I can fully admit I still get nervous reading.
All right, so Mike is going to ask you some questions.
I'm just amazed we have a sellout artist and writer right here in the Geek Seat. You know when the last time we had one of those, Mike?
it wasn't me.
All right, Aaron.
So who's going to be asking the questions, Mike F or Mike G?
Mike F is. That's right. You ready for your first question, Aaron?
Yeah.
All right. Your first question is, what was the coolest thing that you've ever seen in a movie, TV show, or a book?
Well, I got to say the movie Star Wars in the fifth or sixth one when Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker go to lightsaber battle. And what I really like is, I am your father.
Oh, that is a good one.
I know, that really makes the story seriously twisted.
Yes, it does.
Oh, yeah. You go, what the heck? What was your most disappointing movie, TV show, comic, or book?
I don't think I actually have one.
Really? There wasn't one where you just looked at it and went, oh, man, no way.
No, actually.
Wow.
He's young.
Yeah, give him time.
Hey, I'm only 10 years old.
That's right. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Is today your birthday?
No, it was on the 2nd.
Oh, wow. We missed your birthday. All right, Mike, let's restart singing happy birthday to him.
That's good. No.
Okay, good.
We'd have to pay for the rights.
Wait. Maybe. No, I don't know.
All right, Aaron. Go ahead. What creative thing do you like to do?
Well, I like to draw a lot.
Right.
And how I draw best is the person, the body. So basically, what I do for the body is, so I draw two J's opposite sides. And then on the bottom, I connect them with a smile. And then I do upside down J's on both sides for the shoulders. And then when I think I've gone down enough, listen to this. I go straight, a C, well, kind of backward C, and then straight down again to make the sleeve.
Really?
Because I'm drawing this right now on the paper Mom gave to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool lesson.
That is a great lesson.
And then you just draw the logo on there or something, but it has to be a small logo because there's only a minimum amount of space of how wide you want to make your person, how fat or stuff. No offense.
He's good. I like him.
No fizz.
What thing do you not like to do?
I do not like to... what I don't like to do is when my teacher goes and does this thing with her arms, when we're learning about the associative property in fourth grade, she goes parentheses, like she's making C's with her fingers. And that was basically the most embarrassing thing. I just don't like to do it.
Okay.
And they were, and on the computer, she was playing the worst song ever.
What song was it?
These Russian people, not to be racist or anything, but they're like, associative property of a dear son. So I'm like, oh my God. No. So that's what I don't like to do.
Okay, that's cool. What is your favorite fictional character?
I gotta say Super Cheese.
Well, that makes sense.
I agree with that one. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
What? Who's your least favorite fictional character?
I don't think I have one. But wait. I think it's a derpy person. I don't know.
Okay. Is there any fictional character, like a bad guy, that you're scared of?
I'm only scared of what works in the dark.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. That's cool. What's your favorite quote?
I like to say, oh, shoot, a lot. When something goes wrong, I'm just like, oh, shoot. So it's like, it just gets a little, you know, right?
No, that's very cool. I like that.
That's all he could say.
Well, I know. Well, he could say worse, but then the soap would have to come out.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
You don't want soap.
No. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Well, I actually have like three things. I have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C.
It's good to have backup plans.
My first plan is to be a pro baseball player.
Okay.
That's cool. You want to play for what team do you want to play for?
Either the Angels or the Red Sox.
Okay. Glad you didn't say Yankees. That's all that counts.
Yeah. Well, that's important.
Yankees. Yeah.
I like this kid. I really like this kid. What would you not like to do when you grow up?
I would not like to be in an office space doing boring work, type, and then send to stuff around the world, and then it doesn't get sent, and it just gets so annoying.
No, totally understand that. Wow. All right, you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Probably.
Okay, Aaron. What would be the coolest thing to see in your life?
Well, I actually saw a very cool thing. When I was playing baseball with myself, just hitting balls, I have this lucky bat with, I have duct tape on my bat since it kind of cracked a tiny bit. So whenever I hit it on the tape, it goes far. But this time, it went so far. It was like around 100 feet in front of me. And it went about 25 feet in the air.
Wow.
And I hit that myself. It's just like I watched the ball up in the air and swing right there, right on the sweet spot. Boom! Right up there, I'm like, oh my gosh, I did not know I could do that.
Isn't it amazing when you find out something that you never knew you could do before and it happens?
Yes, very amazing.
That is awesome, sir. Well, Aaron, guess what?
Am I finished?
You made it through the Geek Seat.
All right.
Woo! All right. Congratulations, Mr. Mike Gordon. Tell your nephew what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, which for you is probably going to be a very, very, very long time. Definitely thank you for joining us tonight. We understand that right now you're sold out of copies of Super Cheese, but we're going to get some more, correct?
Correct.
So if anybody out there is interested in one, they can contact me and I can give them more details on that. And you're planning to do some more conventions and keep going with the comics, right?
Yes.
Well, as you do, we will definitely make sure that our listeners are updated. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for calling me. Or letting me on the podcast and stuff.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the ESO Book Club. That is right, folks. We've been promising this actually for quite some time for our Facebook group, and it's kind of like an homage for me because I actually started podcasting on a book club podcast, and I have this man who's joining us this evening to blame for that. Or you might want to go after him when you figure out he's the reason I'm podcasting, folks. So let's welcome Montgomery Lopez to the show.
Hi, for the second time or third time, not sure.
Technical difficulties, sure, folks.
Yeah.
Only took 7 years to return the favor.
Mm-hmm. Only.
Actually, I think we're going on 8 years now that we start. Yeah. Monty and I started that.
Yeah.
Because I think the first one we did was a Bond book.
Yeah.
And then the second one we did was Baltimore.
Baltimore. Yeah.
So.
And believe it or not, you're the only one that attended my book club at the library. So thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. I help support the arts. What can I say? So we also have a couple of great individuals joining us from the Flopcast. Of course, Kevin is with us.
Hello.
So you actually survived living up in New England and having Mike Gordon up there.
Yeah. You know, I thought I could have a nice, peaceful convention. I go to the Northeast Comic Con and yikes, there's Mike from ESO. I cannot escape the power of the ESO network. It reaches far and wide, even up here to Boston.
And if I'm not scary enough, my nephew will turn the screws on you.
Oh man, what a hard sell I got on the new comic book Super Cheese from Mike's 10-year-old nephew. As soon as I got to the table, he was like, "What are we? Do we got a deal here? Are you buying? Come on, $3."
That kid has a future. He was our victim this week in the Geek Seat. So
awesome.
So, you know, we had to trim down some of the questions because, you know, I don't really want to know what a 10-year-old's geek fantasy is. So, but it was awesome. And, you know, we'll keep him tied up there until he gets the next issue up. Right, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah. Until he's old enough to read Sandman.
Exactly. And of course, joining us, we have Alan O.W. Barnes, artist extraordinaire.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited about doing this.
Alan, should I announce you as artist, a musician, just all around talented guy?
Oh, whatever. I fake my way through all of it. Well, that's the secret.
That's how we podcast. What do you mean?
That's exactly right.
You know, if anyone ever learns what we really do, you know, oh, we'd be in a lot of trouble. But we decided to talk all about Neil Gaiman's Sandman. We've done actually an episode way back on ESO about 2 years ago on the character. But I thought it'd be pretty cool for our premiere episode of the book club to actually talk about Preludes and Nocturnes, which introduced us to the character. And we can go a little more in depth to the stories because I think it reprinted the first 8 issues of Sandman.
Right.
Yes. And introduced us to the character of Morpheus, and also Death, his sister. Of the
other
endless.
Ones I mentioned, the other ones are mentioned too, but I don't think I think we might see one of them, but like in one panel. But they're, I think they're all mentioned. But
they're mentioned many times throughout.
The stories. but the other, the only ones we actually see, I think, are Dream and Death. And like I said, I think there's one panel of. I'm not sure if it's Destiny or.
Yeah, I think there's a panel of Destiny, and I think they don't even name all of them. I don't think Delirium actually gets a name check, and certainly not Destruction, because he didn't get introduced until years later. But most of them get at least.
Yeah, I don't think Despair is mentioned either.
Yeah, maybe just once.
I think I think Despair is once. Because when they were talking about, you know, all the different, when he was in hell, he was talking to him about the others.
Yeah.
When he was talking to Morningstar.
Yeah. Since this was like, it came out in 89 and it was our, introduction. Like, I don't know. I'd kind of curious before we really get into it, like what everybody's experience was when they picked in. Did they pick it up when it first came out, or did they know what they were getting into, or was it just something new that or they heard about later? So, I'll fully admit, in full disclosure, I picked this up in 89 off the rack. I hadn't been into a comic store in a long time, and I was in college, so comics were a bit of a not a monthly thing for me at that point.
Right.
And I grabbed a bunch of, like, you know, I was really into Batman, so I caught up on Batman. I grabbed a bunch of Batman stuff. I remember looking over and seeing this one section that had like Ninja Turtles and hamsters and all these other animals that were rodents that were fighting each other or whatever. And I was like, I don't know what all that's about. So I just kind of ignored that. And then I found two other DC books that caught my eye. The first, there was the first issue of The Shadow, which was doing a run then too.
Right.
That was the
Howard Chaykin version, I think.
I think maybe you're right. It had the Bill Sienkiewicz cover.
Yes.
And then the Sandman. So I picked up the first issue of Sandman because the McKeon cover just grabbed me. I'm like, this looks really weird. So, I remember reading it going, and I read it and I said, I have no idea what to make of this. And I just did not follow up with it until years later when it became a thing. And I was like, oh, okay. I must not have missed that. So then I went back and read a lot of stuff, so I had to get caught up on it, and you know, but that first issue did not sell me.
Really?
Right. I think that's true for a lot of people. I gotta admit that I didn't see it on the shelf when it first came out. A friend of mine named Chip Talent hipped me to the Sandman when I was, oh my goodness, probably about 30, so very early 2000s. And I read the first I read this one. Frankly, it didn't grab me. And I came back to it about 2 years later and read the second one, and it had a really, really profound impact on me. And I've probably read the whole series now about 3 or 4 times.
What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, for me, I did not start reading it right away. Fairly early, though. I was certainly a regular comics reader at that time, and I remember, I subscribed to the Comics Buyer's Guide back then, which was the weekly newspaper all about comics, and their co-editor and reviewer, Don Thompson, was raving about Sandman as soon as it started, and he knew right away. Don was saying, this is great, this is amazing, this is important, everyone has to be reading Sandman, and it seemed like practically every week he was recommending it in Comics Buyer's Guide, and I finally broke down about a year and a half later, because I think my first issue I bought was one of the Dream Country issues, number 18, which, you know, after the Doll's House storyline. So I had to kind of go back to get those first 15, 16 issues after that. And I think if, like a couple of you have said, I may not have been grabbed by it right away if I'd started from number one. I don't know if I would have come back automatically for number two, because I think it took, and I'm sure we'll get into this as we discuss it, but it took a while for Sandman to really turn into Sandman. There were some growing pains in those early issues.
I think, as you mentioned, a Dollhouse, I think that was a turning point for Sandman. I mean, I think a lot of people knew what it was and knew some people were able to say, hey, this is different. This is important. But it wasn't until Dollhouse that I think everybody was convinced, like, oh, yeah, this is what Sandman is.
Yeah, definitely. And especially you have to remember, this is the era. This is, well, it's pre-Vertigo for one thing. And also this was pre-automatic. Everything turns into a trade paperback collection. That was not the standard back then.
Exactly.
And the first Sandman trade paperback collection was not Preludes and Nocturnes. It was the Doll's House. After that, that storyline wrapped up, and very quickly DC collected it. And that's when I bought that. The first collection that came out was the second storyline. And that trade paperback originally was just called Sandman, because there wasn't necessarily a plan at that time to collect everything. They had to like double back and then collect the first storyline and the third storyline. They came out about the same time, I think.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Monty?
Well, for me, believe it or not, when I started working for Borders Bookshop, we opened up the first store in Florida. And my friend Rudy, who used to work with me, told me about the Sandman. But I didn't get into it until Volume 4, The Seasons of the Mist. And what she was telling me about the whole storyline with the Sandman and getting the keys, the keys from Lucifer to rule Hell's Gate and all that. So I didn't know anything about Sandman up to that point. So it was kind of interesting now going backwards. And because of this book group, I tried to read the beginning storyline. And not until I known about like Constantine and all the other dark and mystical side of DC and Vertigo that I can really appreciate Sandman from the very early beginnings. But again, I was very late into the game. I had no idea what the hell Sandman was. And this is when, you know, the death of Superman was still running high in the comics. So I was still on that kind of plane of DC and Marvel Comics. And this was a completely different element altogether.
It's so different. And it's, I mean, you know, I think was you, Kevin, mentioned about writing for the trade. I mean, that wasn't done. But this feels like Neil was already writing for the trade. Like that first issue is just so, it really is like a prelude and a nocturne. I mean, it really is. You know?
It's the first issue was very much universe setting and it started building. Cause for me, it was, you know, I was collecting comics for many years at this point. This was actually the point right before I opened my first shop. And so I was a friend of mine whose shop I was going to recommended it. And he says, dude, you're reading Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. And some of the John Constantine stuff was already starting out with Hellblazer. So he said, if you like that, you got to pick up the Sandman. And I think, and he said, you'll get a kick out of it because it ties into the Golden Age Sandman even. And it's like, really? And so I picked it up and I was hooked right from the very first issue. Loved the character, loved what they did about his capture, about the whole, you know, thing about the people trying to capture death. And because there's so many stories out there about people trying to do that. And it tied in perfectly. And then once the first issue was done and they went on to the next one, they started tying it into the mainstream DC universe, but the horror side of it.
Right.
And was explaining how, like, I used to love the old 1970s horror series that they did, like House of Mysteries, Chamber of Secrets, and, you know, stuff like that. And they tied it right into that, you know, explaining the three witches, Cain and Abel, you know, and it was just awesome stuff. And then even more so later, you know, what they started to, they had Batman in it, they had Constantine. These stories were just awesome.
And I'll bet most Sandman readers don't realize how connected so many of those characters were to previously published DC Comics stories, because they didn't really address it directly in the story. You didn't get those old fashioned, you know, editor's notes, see House of Mystery number 221. You know, there was none of that. So I'll bet most people don't realize that Cain and Abel and Lucian, the librarian, and Eve, and so many of those characters came from the old mystery books, and Destiny You know, that people's minds are blown. Sandman fans, when they find out Destiny of the Endless was not a Neil Gaiman creation for this series.
Right. Not at all.
Plus the three witches.
Exactly. Or even you had a character, a really lame Justice League villain like Dr. Destiny.
Right.
And my God, what Neil Gaiman did to that character.
Oh, man, that one issue is just brutal.
It is brutal.
Mm-hmm. Like one of the most brutal. Still, just rereading it just for this podcast, I was like, I'd just forgotten how brutal it is. And now I just had nightmares.
Mm-hmm. Those poor people in the diner. Come on.
I am so glad I was not in that diner that day.
Yeah, the 24-hour story, the diner story, that was really one of the only pure kind of modern horror stories that they did in Sandman. It was part of that the horror line, so to speak, that Swamp Thing started for DC. But Sandman really drifted more towards urban fantasy and fantasy and that kind of thing. So the just pure creepy horror of that issue really stands out.
I don't think DC knew what they had either. I mean, looking at some of the advertising for Sandman when it came out, you know, it's got this image of Dream and looking all ominous and dark. And it says, "I will show you terror in a handful of dust." I mean, it seems like this is a horror book. And yet, you know, it really isn't. This is, I think, before the phrase dark fantasy became a thing. Certainly to the extent that it is now, in some ways, you know, I mean, Neil Gaiman changed a lot with this series. He changed the comic book industry. He changed the dark fantasy genre. He changed everything with this. It's so impactful. And yet at the time, like I said, it's so weird for me because when I think back about it, I read that first issue and it's the premise. I don't think I was turned off by the premise because I thought that it's dark. It's these guys are trying to capture death and they miss. They capture Dream instead. And it's like, but to be honest, I'll be totally honest with you because I'm a big fan of his art. But the art in the Sam Keith art did not do anything for me at the time, not for this. And from what I understand, the two of them didn't really get along very well
exactly
during the
right.
making of this. So, I mean, I think Keith is out of there by issue six, right? By issue five or six, he's gone.
Yeah.
And we get someone else. It just didn't feel like they were on the same page, maybe.
The quote that I've read from Sam Keith is that he felt like he was Jimi Hendrix trying to play with the Beatles.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. That's just the first five issues are Sam Keith, and I completely agree. I think that it's a part of the kind of rough start that Sandman had in a way was the art. It just the Sam Keith style, which has its strengths for certain kind of stories, it just didn't
absolutely.
Fit. Absolutely, didn't.
I mean, the Max is brilliant, but I agree with what you're saying. I don't think that it worked with this story.
Mm-mm. Yeah, not I love a lot of other Sam Keith's work, especially his creator stuff. When Sam's in control of, like, you know, the story and the art, it works so well. But when you put him together with another, it's kind of like oil and water. It's like they all have they each have their own vision, and it's just clashing.
But the work he did in that Constantine story, where when they walked into that house, where the woman, the junkie, had been using the sand, and basically it basically tore apart her body, but it gave her magical powers of Dream, and literally she put her father all across the walls, and he was still alive when they walked in. And
don't get me wrong. I think that there are great moments of Sam Keith art through this. I just don't think that he was, I don't think that he ever found a really good pulse for how to do it continuously.
Oh, sure. Nope. I agree with that. And it still led into good stories. And I think that's the power of Neil.
Right.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I mean, that's evident right from the beginning. I mean, the premise is good. The writing is good. You're obviously when you open that book and you start reading, I mean, it's not written like any other comic that I'd read before. not at all. I mean, you get the feeling that this is this, you're going on a journey and right. And something that's steeped in a world that he's created, but yet he hasn't created it yet, not to the extent that he will. And yeah, there's elements of DC's horror line as again, this is before Vertigo. So there's elements of, I mean, the JLA, Batman, et cetera, you know, or the heck, Martian Manhunter appears in this. Kirby's New Gods, you know, are referenced in this. I mean, there's all sorts of, he's playing with the DCU in this, right. But in a way that we've never seen before.
Right.
I think
it's
this was
so dirty and dark.
Because no one knew what Sandman was going to be at this time, including Neil Gaiman, including Karen Berger. You know, that they were starting something that turned out to be this huge sprawling masterpiece, this classic, but it's not like they had the whole plan worked out going in. And so one of those early missteps was hiring Sam Keith, who's a talented artist, but didn't fit. And Neil is certainly finding his way at first. And I think in the afterword of this volume, when he mentions the Justice League issue, he said that was my perhaps misguided attempt to incorporate superheroes into the storyline. And I think that the reason that even though this is before the trade paperback era where automatically we collect everything, the reason that it works so well as a collection, that this 8-issue story, it's not that Neil was writing to the trade. He was writing to when he assumed they would cancel the book.
That's right.
I know he said right. in an interview, like, he worked out, well, it'll take this long for sales figures to come back, so we'll probably make it 7 or 8 issues. And so I want to get in one solid storyline that fits that space, and then we'll be canceled.
Right.
Yeah, I did read, this isn't the first thing by Neil I'd read. I did read his Black Orchid series, which I enjoyed
a bit. Mm-hmm.
And this was written about as strong as that. But I think the other thing that, you know, was confusing to people too, is that this wasn't even though it was a new character and everything about it was new, the name Sandman had existed for decades as an actual DC hero.
Yeah.
So you're picking it up going, oh, it's the Sandman. Like it's going to be the adventures of this guy. And it's not.
I actually read an interview with Gaiman where he said that the original idea was to revamp the Kirby version of Sandman.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And, which he did incorporate into the Dolls House storyline.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yes. And the Wesley Dodds version even appears in the very first issue.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm a big Wesley Dodds fan. So
of course.
Yeah. I'm a big Matt Wagner fan. So that, like, that run of Sandman Mystery Theater was probably one of my favorite runs of comics, like, ever.
But well, yeah, in the very first issue of that, they actually reference Sandman.
Yes, they do. And then they eventually did a special with the two of them together.
Yes, the Sandman Midnight Theater.
Yes, Sandman Midnight Theater, which was a pretty awesome story. I definitely recommend people check that out because there's a lot of things about this first issue that comes back in that.
Yes, and even the helm of Morpheus that he's attempting to retrieve in this first storyline, I think, has some Wesley Dodds influence in it. There's a little trace of the gas mask shape in it.
Yeah, good point.
Oh, very much so. It's interesting because the stories that he produced for the first 7 issues, it all, you know, it basically establishes who the characters are, his universe, his land, and, you know, him retrieving his items.
Yeah, it's him getting his powers back.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, him getting to full strength and then him moping around in the 8th issue and having to be cheered up by his sister.
Right.
This also was the time period of alternative rock music, goth. Obviously, that's a huge influence on this book. You know, I'm not saying Robert Smith was a template for Morpheus, but Robert Smith was a template.
Oh, big time!
Right. That's awesome.
Although there's a sort of a cross between Robert Smith and maybe Bowie. I don't know. I mean. I mean, obviously, he seems like he's of that, like, just surreal quality.
Well, when I saw the issue where Sandman goes to hell, Lucifer looked to me, when you first see him, looks like Bowie.
Yes. I had that same thought.
Yeah. It was like, wait a minute, that's David Bowie.
Now, that version of Hell and that version of Lucian and all that, that was really Alan Moore, right?
Yes.
So Neil was just kind of like using that what Moore created there for that part of the story, right?
Oh, exactly, because that's why basically Lucifer was not fully in charge anymore.
Right, right. Because that was interesting to me, because I'm like, why would he do this? I mean, it there's so much going on. You definitely feel like there's this whole world that's already mapped out somewhere that you're just now being introduced to.
Right.
Yeah, which it was. You know, he was pulling so many characters and ideas from previous DC projects that even though we look at Sandman now as this pure Neil Gaiman creation, which it is in a sense that the grand scale of the whole thing was certainly Neil Gaiman's, but at first he was pulling from so many previous sources, including Alan Moore's Swamp Thing and Constantine, definitely, and even the Raven, Eve's Raven Matthew, who doesn't really appear in this first story, but he had roots in Alan Moore's Swamp Thing stories also.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because he was basically Matthew.
Yes.
Was married to Abigail.
Yeah.
At one point, when he was human, not as a
yes.
bird.
Let's get that through. Because that'd be weird.
Yeah. Oh, and her being married to a giant plant isn't weird.
That's fine.
That's fine.
So, all right. Monty, can I ask you a quick question since you're the library expert here?
Go ahead.
Did you, when Sandman started coming out in trades, because I know the library carries trades and such,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have to put a mature label on it for readers?
Well, in this case, it definitely would have to be in the adult section. Even though you would have the call numbers be exactly the same, the only difference is that if there's a letter Y, that's going to be for young adults. If it doesn't have that, then it goes straight up to the adult section. So everything that in the whole Sandman series, the whole series goes upstairs, or at least in the adult section. So there's no way you can have that. But that doesn't mean a team may not check it out. They can, because we're not going to stop them. It's up to the parents for that, not us.
Oh, sure. Sure. And, you know, is it popular still, or is it...
Well, that's the weird thing, because even though in my library and in general, a lot of the superheroes are really big, you know, as far as that, for me, after a while, you get really tired of how many times you're going to have this big summer saga where it's crossing over so many different issues, so many different comics, and it gets repetitive every year. So when I look at Vertigo and what they're doing, this is the kind of thing, it's like, you know what, if you're tired of all this, look for something that's different. And I'm actually going to be actually buying the whole series from my library branch, because I want to introduce these kids who have no idea who the hell this person is, let alone the story that Neil Gaiman created for this character. So that's going to be a brand new audience that I'm going to be bringing to my library.
That's awesome, though. I'm glad you got to do that.
I think the other thing, too, and that's a good point, because new audiences is exactly what Sandman brought to, I mean, suddenly, I know it's a bunch of guys here, suddenly there were women in the comic shops. It was like, right. What?
Right.
Because, you know, and it's not because they found, you know, Morpheus sexy, although there's probably a little bit of that, but it's because these were intelligent stories, not just testosterone, you know, beefy guys beating the tar out of each other and you know, women that were oddly proportioned, you know, being there as well. I mean, this was actual like storytelling that was based in literature that involved like real kind of relatable characters.
Well, if you
I've got a comic book reading friend that whenever I mention that I like the Sandman, he's very quick to say, "Oh, are you a teenage girl?"
Really?
Yeah. Well, yes, absolutely.
Look, Sandman is, I get it, you know, Sandman, is, but, you know, Sandman might have been the Twilight of its time, but I'll take Sandman over Twilight any day of the week.
Heck yeah, man.
Well, if you think about it, though, because look at even the character of Death in this. You know, she is not what you would expect in a modern comic book. She looks like the average goth girl you would see at a record store. Or, you know, at a con or something. She looks like a normal girl. She's not overly busty. She has a normal body shape. Mm-hmm. And she looks like your normal teenage, you know, probably late teen girl.
I don't want to give them too much credit here, but you could make an argument that Sandman also, because of the character of Death, inspired, like, cosplay before it was cosplay.
I agree with that.
Definitely. When you were going to conventions, you always saw women dressed as Death. I mean, as many as Harleys as you see now, that's how many, like, you know, not maybe not as quite as many, but you know, if for women who would not normally even think about dressing up as a super or comic book character.
Yeah, I would consider that to be like the Princess Leia cosplay of its time, the slave outfit, where you see everybody doing it. Back then, it was all Death everywhere, so it was on that same level.
And it wasn't that hard to put together that costume either. It was a fairly easy costume to do, especially if you had dark hair and you could just spike it up. And, you know, if you want to put on a little pale makeup and some eye makeup, and then an Anakin around your... neck. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. And you're dressed as Death.
I'll tell you what, when that Death miniseries hit with art by Chris Pacello, I mean, that was the, like, if Sandman was a fluke, like, Death was the second punch that said, nope, this is for real, comic industry. This is going to hit you and your life's not going to be the same ever again.
I could see that. And it's interesting because some people say that Death saved Sandman, the series, because of the character.
We were talking about it having a rough start. I think that most people think that Sandman really found its stride at issue 8 with the introduction of Death.
Yes, yeah. I agree. That's the first issue that really felt like what Sandman would become for the rest of its run.
Right.
Because at least you had somebody, because pretty much, I mean, we're introduced to a guy who, a main character, the book's named after him, who, you know, is captured and just held in captivity for the duration of the first act, so to speak, and really doesn't do a lot to get out of his situation until the jailers are negligent. Mm-hmm. And then he takes advantage. He slowly gets his groove back. Then he mopes in the next issue, you know, instead of being victorious, he's all like mopey and in the issue. And if it's not for that character of Death kind of just cheering him up or, you know, giving him quote unquote life, ironically enough, he, we would kind of be like, why do we want to follow this guy?
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike, because he's not just moping through the early part of Preludes and Nocturnes. He's awfully mopey through the whole series.
Absolutely.
And you know, he's not a necessarily likable character, and this is your lead, this is your title character, and he's standoffish, he's vengeful, he's grumpy, he's angry, and he mopes around all the time. So the readers need something to cling to, and you're getting little bits of the supporting cast is fun, Cain and Abel and Lucian, but then when Death finally arrives in number 8, suddenly now this is Death, but guess what? Death is cute and likable and quoting Mary Poppins, and I think that's when the readers really got it. Like, okay, this is something special.
Well, one of my favorite.
She has her own version of, hey, good looking, I'll be back to pick you up later.
Exactly. Oh, and she did. Oh, did she ever. One of my favorite characters, which didn't make this book, he comes in the next one, is Marv, the pumpkin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But it does appear in one panel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which briefly is referenced later. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sandman Morpheus rides a bus through a dream world at one point, and Merv is the bus driver. And then when the Merv character later appears for real, and he's asked, "Oh, what did you do while Dream was gone?" He said, "Oh, a little of this, little of that. I drove a bus for a while." So they reference just that one panel from the first story arc. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was certainly one of the most fun members of Dream's supporting cast.
Exactly. And it was great. They built a whole world around him. But it's true. Even in that issue where he goes to hell, you reference something about his past right there. Mm-hmm. When he's walking with the demon and he is going past the cells. And he runs into one of his ex-lovers.
Yeah, Nada.
Yeah.
And yeah, even though, you know, Gaiman was expecting this book to be canceled any day now, he was still planting all those seeds throughout the storyline for possible future stories. And yeah, that little sequence with Nada was one of them. And that's where you see Dream suddenly took on African features for that two or three panels when he was speaking with Nada, and a reference to "I haven't forgiven you yet." So it's like, wow, you know, you get this amazing, right, shocking moment of yikes, there's something that happened here in the past and you want to know what it is. And then they just move on.
Mm-hmm. Or the even worse in some ways, if you think about it, every time somebody looks at Sandman or a Dream, he looks different to them depending on their culture and background.
Yes.
Right.
And that's
very different to a Martian.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, even
actually, on that note, the first issue of the Sandman I usually give people if I want to get them into it is not from this trade. I usually give them the cat story.
Dream of a Thousand Cats.
Dream of a Thousand Cats. Mm-hmm.
It's Lonely Cat Women's favorite issue out there.
The Simpsons Crazy Cat Lady.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Enjoys Sandman number 18. Yes.
But it's awesome because even in the very first issue, he represents himself as the Black Cat, if you mm-hmm. remember, in the dream.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And they've used that many times throughout the series.
And then especially, actually just last week, I read the Sandman Overture, which just mm-hmm. came out in trade paperback just a few weeks ago. But that was the recent series. You know, Gaiman finally yeah. came back and did a full new story. And it really ties into Preludes and Nocturnes, and that it kind of leads up to here's what was happening to Dream that led him to be captured at the beginning of Preludes and Nocturnes. And it's yeah. the art is beautiful. It's a great, great story. Obviously, everybody has to read Overture. But the cat
did the team dream, up with Sam Keith again.
Yes, they did not get Sam Keith back for this. They got that J.H. Williams who drew Promethea. Yeah. So the art is just spectacular, of course.
Absolutely. So,
but Sandman in cat form plays a large part in Overture.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It's interesting though too, because in this with Overture, are they going to number it with the trades? You know how each one's numbered on the spine.
Zero. Right,
is it going to be zero?
Yeah, volume zero.
I haven't read Overture yet. I was trying to figure out how to, like, if I should wait, like, if what edition, because since I have the others in absolute form, yeah. I'm kind of like, yeah. Are they going to put that out as an absolute or?
I'm sure they will eventually.
Yeah. But it's so small, you know, it'd be so much smaller than the others. So I figure they're waiting to get, you know, I don't know if they're going to put more material in. I don't know what's going to happen, but
yeah. I'd go ahead.
No giving away clues. Have they put Dream Hunters in an absolute yet?
That's a good question. I don't know that they have. I don't know if that's in the last one or not.
The reason I bring it up is because, I mean, it seems like there are enough like offshoot stories at this point that they might consider doing something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But I'll admit though, I have mixed feelings about Overture. Like I don't think that the story holds up to what Sandman became, and man, as beautiful as that art is, sometimes it's tough to figure out what's going on.
I always felt like with Overture was a little bit of a, you know, like let's play off and try to get as much money off of the Sandman characters.
Well, Overture was supposed to be like a anniversary reunion, right?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So I think it was well intended. I mean, obviously DC wants to make money. Like we've seen that bring back Watchmen and all sorts of ways. And they're not afraid to milk the cow, but, sure. But you know, Neil's been a lot more gracious than Alan has. So you don't want to tick him off and let him do things at his own pace. And apparently, yeah. So I'm curious to read it. I did not, until you said that, Gavin, I did not realize it was a prequel to this. So that's
interesting. Yes, it really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is. Absolutely. It actually ends with the capture.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
That leads into this book that we're trying to review.
That's exactly right.
So actually, we've been talking for quite some time already. But we've got about 5 more minutes to continue talking about the Preludes and Nocturnes. Would you recommend this for people who've never read Sandman, though, as a starting point, or would you start them with some of the other more established?
I've kind of already answered that. I usually start people with Dream of a Thousand Cats and then try to get them to read from the beginning after that.
I think that's a great idea. And that just happened to be my first Sandman issue, just coincidentally, just by chance, that happened to be the first issue that I picked up. But
really,
but there are so many great one issue stories that I think that's a great way to go. Is that's certainly one of the ones. Maybe Midsummer Night's Dream, maybe Ramadan. So there's a bunch of good ones that you could give someone that they could enjoy just as a one shot, and then say, okay, now this is part of a huge sprawling story. Now go back to the beginning.
Yeah, I think if, you know, obviously now we have trades, right? So, and the absolutes and all that kind of stuff. So if someone's getting the first trade, you know, knowing that, I think there's enough there, certainly by the time they get to the end of it, that they'll go on. Because, I mean, that's enough for me. But if they just don't know anything, you know, certainly to give them a one-off is probably not a bad idea. But everybody wants to start with issue one, right? So
sure.
And binge read, you know, and certainly though, to your point, Mike, you know, if, you know, they've always talked about, ever since Sandman's been a hit, they've talked about trying to do a movie, a TV show, whatever, right?
Yep.
Trying to bring it to life in live action. And it's going to happen eventually. And hopefully
I'm scared of that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I hope that, I mean, I think all of us, well, I think most of us would agree that it's definitely more TV material than it would be movie material, because certainly if the movie that you're going to make is this trade, then you've got a rough ride ahead of you.
Right.
Because this story is good. And it opens up a lot of doors, but if you're not going to close those doors or explore those doors, like a TV series would promise that, but a movie would just be like, okay, and you tell like, yeah, and it'd be this gruesome, you know, Dr. Destiny story that Sandman would just be getting his powers, then be mopey at the end, and then boom, you get introduced to this great character, and then it's over, credits. It's like, it would be like, I don't know if we want to see another one of these.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, it gets worse, because I found out that John Peters, at one time, he was interested in producing this. He wanted to have a different version of Sandman where teenagers were at a slumber party and were doing a seance to capture him. Or the other one was Sandman wears tights and punches people out. The other one was that there was like a rave club scene. And then to tie it all to Y2K. So if you know John Peters and you know his storyline, like with a robotic, you know, spider, which I'm surprised is not in there, you know, it gets to be a point. It's like he doesn't get it. He might have done great with Batman, but let's leave it at that.
Yeah, wow. It's hard to picture Sandman as even a movie or a TV show. I have a hard time envisioning it being done well. And I think maybe that's why it's just been dragged in and out of development for decades now, is that it's so hard to get a handle on how to do it. And I know that Gaiman at times has said that because they've been developing Death as well. And I know that Neil Gaiman at one time said that doing the Death, the High Cost of Living story, might make a lot more sense. And he said, well, you look at that story, it's film shaped. It has a beginning and a middle and an end.
Yes.
And you can't say that for all of his other stories.
No, the Sandman stuff.
Gaiman actually tried to get on board as the director for that at one point.
Mm.
So,
yeah, I guess it shows you how hard it is to get anything made in Hollywood that you've got these classic stories from, you know, they're more than 20 years old now and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And certainly those people who are looking for a more in-depth analysis of any of the books of Sandman, I definitely recommend The Annotated Sandman.
Absolutely.
I mean, that will tell you page by page sections, you know, with Gaiman's notes on there, insights, references, you know, it's kind of like, pop-up video for, well, the kids don't know what that is now. Anyway. But,
stop this silly talk, Michael Gordon.
But I mean, they've got like all the references that are in there and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, yeah, we could have spent, you know, really endless. There's the pun.
No,
right?
Pun intended there.
Endless amount intended. Of time. Yeah, exactly. I intend the pun always. Always intend the pun.
That's right.
That, you know, because that's, you know, that it, this is so deep. And right from the beginning, it is. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's all right there. And you definitely, you feel, like I said, you feel the weight of it. Like I said, I'm reading the absolutes. Of course, it's heavy. But, but really, I mean, the story itself, it's smooth. The writing is there. It doesn't throw you off, but, there's a weight to all the panels, all the words. Do you just feel like you're reading something important?
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you're in a dream.
Right. In several issues. That's true.
Oh, exactly.
I'm going to recommend a couple other books, along with what your recommendation for the annotated version. There's something called The Sandman Companion by Hy Bender, which has a collection of interviews, not just from Gaiman, but from a lot of the other people who worked on the series, the other artists and things. There's a book called Neil Gaiman's The Sandman and Joseph Campbell in Search of the Modern Myth by Stephen Rauch, which is a it's actually a literature master's thesis. And this guy published his thesis on the subject of comparing Sandman to the Joseph Campbell book. And then, of course, the one that I think everyone probably knows about is the Sandman Papers, it's a collection of essays published by Fantagraphics.
That's awesome. Any other final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I would add that the one thing that we only barely touched on that I think is instrumental to the success of Sandman are those Dave McKean covers.
Oh, well, absolutely.
That was my final thought. So yeah, go for it.
That was it. That's all I had.
No, those covers, and I'm glad they included them in the trades.
Oh yeah.
Because that's one of the things that caught my mind, you know, my eye with it was just how amazing those covers were. And it's just like, wow.
I went to an exhibit of some of the original covers from Sandman once several years ago. This was back when the Words and Pictures Museum was still in business out in Western Massachusetts. And they are astonishing to see the originals. Because a lot of them are 3D. There'd be bits of frames and objects and things, as well as the paintings and photography and everything that went to it. There'd be these 3D structures he would build that then they would then take the picture of to make the cover. So they're just astonishing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. His work is just wow.
And I think we should also mention another thing that really contributed to how special the Sandman series looked was the lettering by Todd Klein.
Oh, very much.
So many of the characters had their own special styles of the lettering, and that contributed to how you interpret the way that they're speaking in your head as you read it. And that really, they put so much thought and care right out of the gate into the lettering.
Absolutely. I have to say that actually it's an influence on my work. One of the things, decisions that I made, as odd as this sounds, when I created Tiki Zombie, I'm like, every character is going to speak in a different font because they all speak differently because I admire the work of Klein and what he did in Sandman and then other work as well.
You know, please, you could check up the first edition, of course, of Neil Gaiman's Sandman and check it out on the Amazon store where you can, you know, help support the station, as we say all the time.
That's a pretty heavy stocking stuffer.
Oh, it is. But, you know, it's definitely worth it. People will thank you for it. So let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the computer game, The Binding of Isaac. Now, I play a lot of different games, whether they're on the computer or tabletop, and very few make me look at a game after I've started playing it and just be like, what in the world am I playing? This game is super fun, but visually weird. If you know the story of Isaac from the Bible, then the story of the game is common to you. However, the creature design and all the add-ons for Isaac in the game are what make you go, what am I playing? And the poop. Yeah, I said that right. It's weird. Isaac has to fight his way through the basement under his house after escaping his mother. You fight and kill monsters with your tears, and the monsters sometimes give you hearts to replenish your health or bombs to use for extra firepower when you're fighting other monsters or bosses. You have a lot of different bosses to play in this game, and they're all at the end of each level. Once you get to the final level, you fight Mother. There are unlockable characters in the game, so there's a lot of replay value. And there are lots of level and bosses, so a lot of times you don't get the same rooms every time. And the music is done by the same guy that did the music for the game I talked about last week, Crypt of the Necrodancer. So it's some really cool stuff. The Binding of Isaac has a lot of replay value, and it's a game that you can play that you don't have to invest 6 or 7 hours in at a time. You can play it for 20 or 30 minutes and then walk away and come back and play it again. I would highly suggest this game if you like weird games with a weird storyline, or if you just like games where you have to kind of move around and shoot stuff. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
We ain't had no time to drink that beer. 'Cause I understand you've been running from the man that goes by the name of the Sandman. He rides the sky like an eagle in the eye of a hurricane that's abandoned. I understand you've been running.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Con!
Last weekend, I had the privilege of being in New England. I was actually in Wilmington, Massachusetts at the Northeast Comic Con and Collectibles Extravaganza. This is a show that is put on by Gary Summers. He is a collectible enthusiast. He is a pop culture figure. A lot of people know Gary. Most people know him because he was the pop culture quote-unquote expert on Antiques Roadshow on PBS for a long time. You definitely know him by seeing if you saw him. I mean, he's a hippie, wears aloha shirts, he has long hair, he's quite a character and a fun one at that. And he has been putting on shows in the New England area since the late 70s. So these shows are always family oriented. They're always got a good vibe to them. There's always music involved. There are musicians there. There's always a concert on Saturday night at the venue. It's a fun show. So I'd heard a lot about it. So I decided to go there, and I had the distinction of bringing my nephew, who had just finished his first comic book, Super Cheese, as you heard earlier in the interview, to sell at this show. And we had a great time. It was attended. It's a smaller show. It's a 2-day show, and it's about, I'd say about 2,000 to 3,000 people. So it's not like huge. It's not terribly tiny. Certainly I've been to a lot of shows that are smaller. A lot of different kinds of vendors, a lot of Mike, you would have been in heaven, because there were about, I don't know, 20 pop vinyl figures, vendors. Different vendors that were selling vinyl figures. You would have been going crazy, because there was a lot of them. They had some really cool guests. I think their big celebrity guest was Dean Cain, fresh off his recent appearances on Supergirl. The line for him that every time I went near him was fairly long. A lot of women in that line, as you could expect. They also had Candy Clark, who was in American Graffiti, and she worked with David Bowie and the Man Who Sold Man Who Fell to Earth. She was there. A few other actors. Two of the members of Devo were there. And they did not perform during the concert, but they were there to meet fans and do photo ops and that kind of thing. They also had some unique vehicles there. This is the first time I'd ever seen the Chariot from Lost in Space. I believe it was a replica, but man, it was cool. And on Sunday, as we were breaking down the table, it actually moved out of the auditorium, and it actually worked. So to see a Chariot go down, to be in motion, moving around with people in it was, I'm not a huge Lost in Space fan. I mean, I'm familiar with it, but it was still kind of geeky just watching that thing happen. They also had a replica of the robot from Lost in Space. They had a replica of the Batmobile, which is always fun to see. Got to meet the Boston Whovians, which is a Doctor Who group up there. A couple representatives of got to talk to them. They had a great display of a TARDIS, which one of them had built, as well as a TARDIS console and a Dalek who had Christmas lights on him. And the Dalek was adorned with a weeping angel on top. So that was pretty cool. The concert was great. Standouts for me was the Tsunami of Sound. Billy West, the voice actor, played a few songs with the Tsunami of Sound. That was fun. The Fantastic Plastics, which were a Devo cover band, and they had some original songs too that sounded very Devo-esque. They were pretty cool. Some other bands that were there were the whole evening was cool. I mean, it was a lot of different kinds of bands, different kinds of music coming together, which is kind of what Gary's all about. It was in a Shriners Auditorium. So the whole thing was the security and the volunteer staff and the people that ran the place. The Shriners were always there lending a helping hand, as they always do. It was just a really good vibe. My whole family was there. My parents were there. My sister's, my in-laws' parents were there. That was pretty impressive to see all of them at a convention. And yet they didn't seem to be bored or going crazy, at least too much so. And my nephew did really well. He sold out of his book, which was very impressive. So I do appreciate everybody there taking the time to talk to him. And some people had advice about the book and gave him encouraging words. Very, very welcoming community up there. And I can't think of a better show for him to have made his comic book debut, because it was a very welcoming crowd. The people there were great, and I definitely thank them for their support of that. And I know Gary's going to put on another show next year in December. Sometimes he puts on a show in spring or early summer as well. Depending on what the dates are, I may check that out because, you know, going up in New England in the December is kind of cold. So might want to try to avoid the cold next time. But it's a good show. I definitely recommend anybody in the New England area that likes going to conventions. I know the big shows are Boston and Providence and, you know, Hartford. But there's a big show in Worcester as well. And there's the Superfest, I think, in Framingham. the Mega Fest. But I definitely got to encourage people to check out, you know, the Northeast Comic Con when they get a chance, because it's a small show, but it's got everything you need. It's got a lot of cosplay, got a lot of great people. And, you know, you're going to spend some money there because there's a lot of good deals and a lot of good independent creators there that you can get to know. And I definitely, like we say, go to the small shows because it helps support independent promoters as well as independent vendors. So I definitely recommend it. And yeah, it was a good show. I had a good time. So anybody else that was there who wants to talk about it as well, please feel free to. I know I saw Kevin Eldridge, who's on this podcast there, and I got to meet Cornflake, his co-host on the Flopcast, so that was pretty fun. And I got to meet another listener there as well, who purchased a copy of the ESO anthology, and I thank you for that, Wayne. It was great to meet you, and if you're listening to this, howdy, sir, and thanks. And hope to see you again, because I think he comes down to Dragon Con. So when you come down to Dragon Con, if you're coming in 2017, please stop by the table and say howdy to us, or come to one of our recordings and say howdy. Always great to meet new listeners. So, and it's always great to hear from you guys. I think our conventions are done for the year. So, you know, we'll kind of maybe do a little wrap up next week or so, sometime in December, about like the conventions that we've been to this year and how the convention scene is gone, and maybe even look ahead to what our tentative schedule is or what we're looking at next year. But if you've got a convention that you want us to help promote for next year or participate in, because we like doing panels, we like being part of the scene. So any way that we can help you guys, please let us know. So reach out to us and contact us, whether you've got a convention that you're promoting or whether you've been to one that you just want people to know about because it's a good show, just like the Northeast Comic Con. Like, I really want people to go to this show and support this show. So I hope more people can come out and do that next year. And if you've got a show likewise that you want people to go to, contact me. We'll have you on. We'll talk about it and help spread the word, because we love talking about conventions.
Oh, wait. Before you're done talking about conventions, I just got something hot off the presses. For fans of WonderCon, because we do have quite a few West Coast fans out on the show, we actually just found out that WonderCon is going to, this year for 2017, it is going to be returning to Anaheim, California.
Ooh.
It's going to be at the Anaheim Convention Center, and it will be, of course, March 31st through April 2nd. It's going to be a 3-day show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it's, you know, put on by the fine folks, put on San Diego Comic-Con. And this is more of their comic-based show. And I've heard wonders about it. Someday I'm hoping to make it to WonderCon because, you know, I've just heard so many good things about it. So it's right next to, probably within a mile or so of downtown Disney and Disneyland. So Anaheim is the place to be for comics in 2017, in spring at least. So check it out. So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I want to thank our guests for being here. Alan, you made it through an episode.
That was awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's nice. You didn't have your partner in crime backing you up this time.
No, Tim Price is out on this one. I don't think he's ever read Sandman, though I've tried to get him to many times.
Oh. Anything you want to shout out or promote?
Let's see. Well, two things, actually. The first one is that my comic Wonder Cat is going to be, at least the first story arc, is going to be wrapping up here in the next month or so, and I'm really excited about that. And I'm going to tell you guys that I just accepted a new comic art job. I'm going to be drawing Marrow Man, which is it's for a nonprofit. They do fundraising to help for cancer and blood disease research.
Oh, wow.
That's really cool.
That is really awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you for joining us. And of course, Kevin.
Hey, always great to get up here on the ESO station, guys.
Well, I didn't know if you'd really want to join us after seeing Mike Gordon this past week. You know,
I was hanging out with Mike all weekend up here in Massachusetts.
I got to meet Cornflake finally. She does exist.
We finally have proof. Cornflake is all too real.
not just a voice simulation that you get masked among you. That's
exactly. Really, I thought he was just using a voice synthesizer.
Yeah, me too. I had my doubts.
She was very excited to get to meet you too, Mike, finally. And yeah, we do the Flopcast up here every week for the ESO Network. And we're into our holiday shows now, so our next episode coming out, I believe, we will be doing a top 4.5 list of holiday villains.
Ooh.
Top 4.5. I love
it. It's going to be fun.
That is awesome. Awesomeness, awesomeness, awesomeness. And Monty, thank you, sir.
No, no problem. Thank you. And actually, you got me inspired again to go back to do a book cast of one of my favorite books that I'm probably going to start in January of Dune. So I might be doing that, but it's going to be a little bit different. Like, I'm going to analyze and have people talk about each chapter of the book. So that might be something that I'm looking forward to do for next year.
That is awesome. And, you know, you do such a good book cast already, you know, in the past, and it's going to be great to have you doing it again new.
Yeah, exactly.
So awesome. And you want to promote that show of yours?
Sure. It's the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I just finished up the 4-episode review of the Supergirl, the Flash, Arrow, and the Legends of Tomorrow, which is the whole Heroes versus Aliens invasion series. So I just did that for almost 2 days straight. I was just kind of weary-eyed, but it was really great to finally see it all put together like DC's versions of the Avengers, basically. So really happy about that. And, of course, Star Wars is coming out less than, 9 days or so? So that's another review I'm waiting to get to do.
It's going to be fun. I am so looking forward to that one.
Exactly.
And last but not least, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to talk about or review or shout out about or whatever?
I'm going to piggyback on Monty because I love to give kudos to the CW and the Berlanti. It's the whole team there for putting together the 4-night event of the invasion storyline, Aliens, Heroes versus Aliens. It was fun. The work that they've done to bring those characters to life and to make a fun DC universe that I love watching 4 nights a week is just so impressive and so welcome that it does give me hope that yes, someday with the right people behind it, we could get even a great Sandman TV series or a great Sandman Mysteries Theater TV series or something of that nature. Because, you know, if the right talent's behind it, these are great characters and great stories that can be brought to life. And I had a lot of fun watching the crossover last week, and I definitely look forward to, you know, more, since the characters definitely, you know, like to go from show to show. So it seems like there's a mini crossover almost every week, but when they get together like this, it's pretty impressive. And heck, we got to see the Hall of Justice. How cool was that?
That was major happiness.
Yes.
Okay, my shout out real quick. Our thoughts and prayers are actually going out to all our friends and listeners out in Eastern Tennessee. It's been out there, you know, our friends in the Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge area, even areas of Knoxville have been hit very, very badly with forest fires that, you know, now have been found out that it's been human set, that somebody actually set those fires. And Gatlinburg is a huge tourist community. Same thing with Pigeon Forge, but there's also people that live there full time where they have cabins up there, or all the forest land that just is the beauty in the mountains, and it's been destroyed. You know, but thank goodness for people. I hate to give, you know, kudos and shout outs to individuals, but kudos to Dolly Parton for offering, you know, to help people get started up again. It's just amazing that, you know, you know, she's still looking in on her roots, and because that's where she grew up, in that area. And it's just, you know, it's just, it's horrifying to see the devastation and the destruction that was done in that area. And these people, especially this time of year, this was right after Thanksgiving, and people were getting ready for Christmas and whatever holidays they celebrate. It was just horrible to see their lives destroyed. It's horrible to think about. You know, I've had a lot of crap going on. I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but not going into too much detail. But it makes you realize what good you have in your life when you see something like this and your life is pretty much destroyed and you have to start over from scratch. And, you know, just if you get a chance, you know, donate to the Red Cross, donate to Goodwill, donate to any kind of charity this season to help people out. And there's even funds out there for the folks in Eastern Tennessee. Please, you know, do what you can. Not like we don't need the help ourselves here on the podcast through the Amazon store, but I hate to say it, it's almost a greater cause.
Almost.
Almost.
Almost. Almost.
Come on. I have to shill somehow on the show. We are just so thrilled to have, you know, all you people listening. And our numbers on the Amazon store have been rising greatly thanks to, you know, you guys out there. But, you know, one thing we haven't talked about in a bit is you guys, you know, leaving feedback for us up on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And, you know, anywhere we broadcast to, there's places to rate the show and leave feedback. Please, please, please leave some feedback for us. Tell people about us. That's how other people find us, because the more people out there rate us and talk about us, we start trending and, you know, more people will find us and such, and they can enjoy the ESO love and everything. Speaking of ESO love, though, we actually have a piece of mail that I want to talk about real quick. We got a piece of mail from our listener, Rob Williams. Rob wrote about our Fantastic Beasts episode a couple weeks back. I finally got a chance to listen to ESO episode 345. First off, I am so sorry to hear about the loss of Sasha. May he rest in peace, and the best wishes to everyone at the station and all his friends and family. That still hits a little close to home. That's another loss that, you know, is hard. Second, on your review of Fantastic Beasts, awesome job. I keep thinking about the way he would do that tilted head look that it made me think of someone but could not imagine who it was until I heard you guys say something about Doctor Who, and I was like, oh my God, that's it. Yeah. Hey, maybe Eddie Redmond could make a good 13th Doctor when the time comes. He, he, he. Also, loved the movie and just wanted to add to your talk regarding the memory wipe. Remember when Newt said that he was talking to Kowalski earlier in the movie about the venom he used, which makes it erase memories, but only the bad ones? So maybe that explains why Kowalski had the images of the beasts in his head. Perhaps the good memories are still there, just buried beneath the surface, needing a bit of rebinding. Keep up the great work, guys. Rob Williams. Thank you so much for that email, Rob. It's always great to get emails from our listeners. And
absolutely.
You know, if you want to write us also, please do. ESOpodcast@gmail.com. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. We'll be back again next week. We are going to be looking at Westworld, the TV show that has taken America by storm for HBO. And man, that ending. Whew, what can I say? So we're going to be back with that next week. And we have a great crew already lined up to talk about it. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, and it's been my pleasure to talk to you. We'll see you soon. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.